This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thanks for staying tuned to The Morning Run. It is 8:37 Thursday, the 8th of December. And of course, you are listening to Chong Jensen, Philip C, and I'm Wong Xiaoning. But before that, we're looking at trade agreements because Malaysia ratified the CPTPP under Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri's administration on 30th September this year, 4 years after the agreement was first signed in 2018. Malaysia was one of the last signatory countries to do so. Only two other countries, Chile and Brunei, have yet to do so.
However, news of the ratification was met with immense pushback from civil society groups, with an alliance known as Gabungan Kedaulatan Negara submitting a memorandum to the new Prime Minister for Malaysia to withdraw from the treaty. Critics of the treaty argue that CPTPP infringes on national sovereignty and puts small domestic producers at risk of being flooded by cheap imports.
Now, proponents argue that the agreement gives considerable market access to Malaysian businesses and that withdrawing will put us behind rival economies in the region, such as Vietnam. So why does this trade agreement remain so contentious even after a decade worth of negotiations and consultations?
For views on this very divisive issue at play, we speak to Dato' Professor Raja Rasia, Distinguished Professor of Economics at University of Malaya. Good morning, Prof. Now, you were one of the economists that signed the memorandum calling for the government to withdraw from the CPTPP. In what ways do the drawbacks of the agreement outweigh the benefits for Malaysia from your perspective?
Thank you. I signed the document not for Malaysia's full withdrawal from the CPTPP. I prefer that the agreement be reviewed to plug problems that relate to IPR governance, because especially when it involves party dependence knowledge, you will need, because it's a public good, non-excludable and non-rivalrous, and therefore, the same kind of governance that you can impose, say, on craft work, which doesn't really affect other industries, it's just like, there's nothing that's going to affect, there's no Mozart and so on, because there is no connectivity as such to affect the growth in knowledge. And the way WTO has been functioning, the TRIPS agreement, trade-related intellectual property rights, to me is not very helpful for developing countries, simply because the nature of governance means that there's asymmetries involved between the big powers and the new guys coming up in the economy. Now, the main problem I see is they're likely to be, like the broader organization, WTO, asymmetries and unilateral actions by big powers. That even includes whether there was prior extensive discussion with, say, top gloves before they banned imports, the US, for example, and then subsequently they went back on it, but obviously it had some implications for the market. My own feeling is it's better to have regional organizations negotiate this deal, meaning ASEAN, for example, with some collective participation, they should negotiate, say, with EU, they should negotiate with NAFTA, and so on and so forth. So my own feeling is, that's just one when I talked about IPR governance, but it's also related to the way investments are dealt with, whether firms from the bigger countries, the more powerful countries, will have greater leeway. And this has happened many times, which is why an example will be why Kia, for example, the Korean government refused to allow foreigners to buy because they knew they were going to asset strip. During moments of a crisis, it's likely that the book value of a firm will be that much lower than the market, higher than the market value. And therefore, that actually leads to firms doing asset stripping, buying and selling it off with no national interest in mind.
And Prof, the Bumiputra business community has been vocal in opposing the CPTPP, arguing it harms local interests. Is this a protectionist argument to maintain the status quo for a particular group?
This is important, the question that is raised, because if you remember, before Malaysia ratified the TPPA that was initiated by the US, the Obama administration allowed exemptions on those matters. Before they allowed it, although, of course, Donald Trump withdrew from that agreement. Now, one has to know that this is an issue based on the claim that with external policing, it will help remove such sectional interests from being prolonged. But my own feeling on this matter which also includes labor and environmental practices. The TPPA allowed such exemption. So what does it mean if you join CPTPP? What does that actually mean? Does that mean actually these constraints will be removed? In fact, I'd be happy, for example, that we bring back ICERT into the picture. But my own feeling is these things are likely to be to withhold streamlining of all those practices. And my own feeling is not much of it has been revealed to us, the kind of concessions that Malaysia may have got, the way it was revealed with the TPPA. And during the TPPA agreement as well, we actually complained about labor and environmental practices being imposed there. And this is an area one needs to take into account. And there are lots of publications on this that doesn't necessarily mean those bigger countries are actually honoring these practices. In fact, there's lots of abuses in their own countries, but who takes actions against them? You wouldn't have found Vietnam taking action against the US or Malaysia taking action. It's always the other way around. So that's why I feel we need to be clear on what we are doing with this agreement. So that we should withdraw completely as such, no.
Right, so give me an understanding on this, because regional peers like Vietnam and Singapore are signing up to the agreement. We've seen Thailand and Philippines express interest. Isn't the concern that if we are not within the group, we will be at a disadvantage?
Oh, that I agree. I agree that we should not get out of it. What I'm saying is it's important to withdraw for a while, in other words, to renegotiate it rather than withdraw completely from it, and then see that it's fair to smaller countries like Malaysia and that our interests are met. Because this is not an agreement where countries are participating to see for the good of everyone. They all recognize, and I recognize too, that you will have a differential sort of tariffication, trade practices, ownership rules, the whole range of things that would benefit participants there. That part of it, I do agree, and which is why I do not say that we should withdraw fully from this agreement, except that we should renegotiate it to ensure that it doesn't really affect us in the wrong way. And that's why I make it clear that this is largely right, the point that you're making. It would continue to subject Malaysian trade to be exposed to unfair access treatment, which is why I say that the opening up the goods and services trade on de-tarification and equal treatment should be pursued. But what are the reciprocal issues? It is unlikely that a wide range of agricultural goods will be fully liberalized, especially the EU. They have not done it before, France, for example. And several exports from Malaysia, including palm oil and other goods, may face continued unfair treatment, with the big powers often relying on unilateral actions to ban imports. I just mentioned palm oil and gloves being some of them.
Yeah, but at the same time, Professor, even if we renegotiate it, we have already ratified it, right? So taking a step back, doesn't this, in a way, hurt our international reputation and shake investor confidence? Can we afford to be seen as unreliable in some way, especially with the global recession looming?
To some extent, I agree with you that could leave a lot of issues related to confidence, related to whether we have integrity in pursuing whatever we've decided before that. And the second thing being that whenever there's a change in government, people then would expect that people might not continue with earlier promises. And legally, that's not very useful for a country.
Yes.
It actually affects confidence, and therefore many will be reluctant to think that we will not change in future. But I think this has to be dealt with in relation to whether legally it will be one where it will damage Malaysia's reputation in the long run. My own feeling is, as I mentioned earlier, I'm not calling for its full withdrawal. I'm just talking about negotiations. It could be done through ASEAN, the AEC that we have now, the ASEAN Economic Community, which originally started with AFTA. My own feeling is changes can be made even if we don't withdraw. As I mentioned earlier, I'm not talking about full withdrawal. I'm just talking about a need to review, renegotiate within the context of being in there.
And Prof, what do you think needs to be in place in order for the agreement to gain a public buy-in?
As it is now, I'm sure, I being in the advisory board of FMM2, I'm sure they are all happy and waiting for us to really appropriate the synergies that come. And again, here is with regards to trade, and especially the fear many companies have that Vietnam would take a big lead over Malaysia. As it is, it's growing more rapidly. As it is, it's showing signs of catching up in Malaysia in many areas. And I believe that the present circumstances mean that over the long run, Vietnam would actually overtake Malaysia in relation to economic development. So I think in terms of the buy-in, the main contentions come from the civil society. And it's important that we engage them in the Gramscian sense because they're concerned about the masses. I'm not talking about FMM, although I, being one of the editors often of the UNESCO Science Report, they tend to use FMM as a civil society participant. That's not right. That's not fair because the civil society, by definition, actually represents the masses. And in here, I think that clarification should be there. And the examples that they provide, I've seen some of them from Jomo, from Giacomo and others, they actually bring out salient, very responsible concerns. But in my case here, I'm not calling for a full withdrawal. It's just that we need to create more awareness to them and also show that such actions are being taken.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Datuk Professor Raja Rasia, Distinguished Professor of Economics at the University of Malaya, giving his views on the CTPP. He's not saying withdraw from it completely, yeah, but renegotiate some of the terms, right?
Yes. And he's asking for that renegotiation to be done on the regional basis, I think to have more clout. His central concern, I think, is the intellectual property, I think, requirements that are being imposed. That's where I think he's most uncomfortable with.
And also just the local manufacturers. Is this going to be a disadvantage to them because they're not going to see reciprocity in, let's say, in the EU, especially when it comes to palm oil? But for me, one thing is, okay, if we do go ahead with this, right, are we going to give support for our SMEs, for our manufacturers to enhance their competitiveness so that they can actually, you know, participate in the entire supply chain? Because even if we, the world, basically it's a competition, right, out there. And do these trade agreements actually help us to be more competitive and recover, especially since we are heading into a global recession? Do the pros outweigh the cons? I think those are the questions I have. Stay tuned for that, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.